My second child was born when he was about three. I decided to go back to teaching. And the personnel, the head of the personnel department happened to be a friend of mine, Ann Bingham. And when I told her I was going back, she said, well, come back. And I said, no, I can't come back, first of all, because my husband is very religious. I said, I never taught on the holidays anyhow, but what is worse, I said, Friday afternoon, I have to be home in the wintertime. She said, I'll give you Colfax. And we lived on Douglas Street at the time. I said, no, Ann, I'm not going to do it. So although she kept calling me, I decided to teach in the Hebrew school. So I went to teach at the Hebrew Institute first. And I taught in the kindergarten and in the regular classes. And then, by a fluke, too, I started to teach at Hillel Academy. And that's where I taught all the years. I became the supervisor of the kindergarten primary department. And then later on, after I had my first heart attack and went back, I started teaching in the high school, the Hebrew high school, because I only wanted to teach a half a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next thing we want to talk about is health and medical care when you were young.
Yes.
And when you were a child.
Yes.
What services were available in your...
Well, we didn't have to depend on clinics or things. My parents were very proud. And the family doctor was Dr. Bloomberg, who was really one of the outstanding men in the Hill District in those days. And he took care of us. And he lived on Center Avenue, a little further down from us, across the street from us, really. And, we had all the rashes of measles and chickenpox and in those days, and mumps and what have you. And I remember when I was 9, I guess, or 10, I had what they called rheumatism then, and I was in bed for 3 months, and that's what gave me the rheumatic heart. So days, they didn't have penicillin, you see, and we didn't know, and he was wonderful. He was just marvelous. And but there was the clinic at the Irwin Kaufman settlement. Mm-hmm. Miss Heldman was the head of the public health nursing, and she was wonderful. I mean, she was almost like a doctor, a mother, a nurse, a doctor to most of the immigrants who lived in the Hill District.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember on Center Avenue, we had, within the space of 2 blocks, there must have been 4 doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And all did well, and they were very caring. They were very caring, and except for the fact that they didn't have the advances that they have today, I think that the status of medicine on the Hill was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for fun and recreation when you were...
Well, as I told you, I'm a voracious reader. Most of the kids went to the Irwin Kaufman settlement. My brother was, of course, the head of the ping pong team and so forth. But I went just occasionally. I wasn't interested, really. I'm not athletically inclined, so I didn't go there. My place was the Carnegie Library on Wiley Avenue. That's where I spent my time. And I'm not a walker, so I never bothered, except to go out with my girlfriend, you know, occasionally. When I went to Fifth Avenue, they did not have a swimming pool until I was a senior. So actually I didn't learn how to swim. But I never really missed it, because as long as I had the books, I didn't care about anything.
Mm-hmm. And did you do any activities with your girlfriends?
Well, I was a member of, I don't know what they called it, and I guess it was Young Judea at the time too. And I was a member, it was a girls group, you know, young Zionists. And it became Young Judea later. I don't recall the name of it now. And we had that. And I belonged to a study circle, a dramatic study circle, because I really liked to act. And
was this in high school?
Yes, beginning of the high school. Uh-huh. And then throughout the high school period.
Were you in plays?
Yes. I remember when I was in high school, and I applied to go into the Delphian, I think it was called the Delphian Literary Society. And my English teacher said to me, listen, Pauline, don't bother, you won't enjoy it. And I said, no, I want to go in. She said, you know, to go in, you have to you have to do something. I said, what do you want, what would I have to do? She said, you know the poem, The Highwayman? I said, that poem? She said, you'll have to memorize it and recite it. Well, I did memorize it. And when I went to, I had to recite it in front of the whole society. I remember it was room 400. It was like an auditorium. I had to get up, and I must have been shaking in my boots. But I went through it to the very end, and then she said to me, okay, you can go in. You had enough nerve to learn this whole thing. I forgot it right afterwards, I want you to know.
That's the innkeeper's daughter.
Yeah.
Were there any other clubs?
There were a lot of clubs.
Did you belong to?
Well, I was, that I belonged to. Let's see, in public school, I did join one club at the Iron Coffin, but I can't remember the name of it for the life of me. I didn't stay there very long because I became very interested in Hebrew, and I started to spend a lot of time at the Hebrew Institute, and they had a Hebrew library there, and they had groups meeting there, Hebrew groups, and like a Chug Ivri, a Hebrew circle, and I used to go there.
Mm-hmm. And your friends from high school?
Yes.
Remained your friends,
some of them that are left. Many of them moved away.
Well, I mean, how about, were they also the same friends that went with you to the Hebrew?
No.
No. You had two different sets of friends?
Yes, I did. Most of the kids that I went to high school with, most of them, were not interested in Hebrew per se, and so I really had two groups of friends, you know.
Mm-hmm. Socially, did that bother you at Janice?
Well, I had a terrible time socially because even when we had our prom, senior prom, and I was a little thing, you know, none of the boys in my class wanted to take me to the prom except one. He's remained my friend to this day, George Neiman. He came up to the house one day and he said, "Listen, Pauline, I'm going to," and he was real tall, George must be about 5'11", and he said, "I'm going to take you to the prom." And I looked at him, I said, "No, George, forget it." He said, "No," and I went with him. He really saved my life, and I've never forgotten it since. I really had a terrible time in high school.
Were people dating at that time, or mostly going in groups?
In the senior year, they were already dating, mm-hmm. Yes. And I didn't mean a thing to me, you know. First of all, my parents wouldn't even have let me go out, you know.
You were too young.
Yeah, but they knew George, and so they let me go with him, and that was it. But I really didn't go out at all when I was in high school.
Now, how about when you were in college?
I was busy because I was running to two colleges at the same time. So I really didn't do anything until after I graduated from teacher's training school, and then I started to go out a little. I was 18, then I was 18, so I was allowed to go out already.
What about your courtship with your husband?
Well, my husband had a sister who was a teacher, and I had met her before, and we became very friendly. I didn't even know him, although when we were kids, they lived right near us. They lived on Miller Street. But then they moved up to Whiteside Road, but I became very friendly with Clara, and we went in the summers, we would go to New York, to the mountains, you know, and we had an apartment in New York because I took several courses, several summers at Columbia University, and Clara was there, and then one day I came up to her home, I visited, and I met my husband, and he was too busy with athletics and stuff, you know, but just like this, I don't know. Took me out once, twice, and then we started really to go out. But when we were engaged, my mother-in-law said that we couldn't get married until my sister-in-law Clara was married, so we had to wait. Well, in a lot of families today.
She's the older.
Yes, she was older. My husband is the youngest in his family.
Mm-hmm.
So we waited a year after she was married, and then we were married in 38.
Mm-hmm. So he was a Pittsburgher, it sounds like you started dating during the time you were both in New York Mountains.
No, he wasn't in New York. No, his sister and I.
I see.
His sister and I, yes.
Went on vacation. Now, these holidays that you went on, that's another subject which we want to get to. But let's continue first with your marriage. First, yeah. You were married in 1938, and you lived where?
Well, the first year we lived with my parents. And then we took an apartment in Oakland.
I'm sure your wedding was an extremely...
Yeah, we had we were married at the Polycetic here. It was a very Orthodox wedding. And I'll tell you how Orthodox it was. Really, really, really funny. I was teaching in Manchester School at the time. And I had invited all the teachers and my principal, Mrs. Ladley, to the wedding. And the wedding was, I'm sorry to say, it was called for 6. It didn't take place till 8 because Rabbi Leiter, who was one of the rabbis, had to go somewhere and we had to wait. He was my in-laws, the rabbi of their synagogue. So anyways, when the wedding, it started, you know, and I remember as I walked down the aisle, I had the veil over me, and I saw my principal there, and I went like this, and she went like this. Just like you do to a child, you know. Well, anyways, after the wedding, we had, you know, we had a reception line, and then everybody went downstairs, and then they have, in Jewish traditional affairs, they have what they call a Sheva Brachot. That is where they have the seven, repeat the seven blessings, and that's done at a separate table, and it's the men, not the women, but the bride and the groom. So I had to go to this Sheva Brachot at the Polytechnic, was in another room, and the reception was going on here. I remember Joey Sims, who lived across the street from us, was the band leader, you know, and they were all dancing. But this thing took about 9.5 hours, and when I came out of there, most of my friends were gone. You know, by that time it was 10:30 or so, and they were all gone. I was so upset at the time. I felt terrible that I didn't get a chance to talk to them. And I remember I was very angry at Rabbi Leiter. And my uncle was the other rabbi. He had came in from, he was living at that time in Portland, Oregon. He came in to officiate, but since he was from out of town, we had to have another rabbi. And I said to my uncle, I'm so upset. He said, please. He said, don't. My uncle. He said, don't start anything. You're starting a new life. I said, you not only married a husband, you married a family of in-laws. And he says, they're very from, he told me, he said, don't start anything. So I had to keep all my anger inside, you know, and, but it was a beautiful wedding, I must say. My gown and my veil, I have two boys, so it was out of the question. I gave it to my sister-in-law's niece, and she wore it years later.
But you were married in traditional white
gown. Oh, yes.
Gown.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you were married to a very Orthodox...
My husband is very Orthodox. Very. His family were very religious, and he is to this day. My husband is a school social worker, and never in his life did he work on a holiday. Or there were times when he had to go to a meeting at the Board of Education, and he walked down, you know, and walked back from our home. Yes, he's very...
And then your home has always been a very...
Very, yes. We've always observed the Sabbath and all the holidays and what have you.
And your children?
My children are... My older boy is not married. He lives here in Pittsburgh. He's in business.
His name is?
David.
Mm-hmm.
And my second boy is a professor at Cornell University, and he also is very... he will not teach on holidays. And
what's his name?
Jerome. He's Dr. Jerome Milch, and he leads the services at Hillel, at the Hillel's camp, at the campus in Hillel. He leads the services, and he reads the Torah. They both went to Hillel Academy, both of my kids.
And where did you live then after your first?
Then we lived in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
And while we lived in Oakland, the war broke out. War broke out. And my husband at the time was, he couldn't get in. It was hard to get in. It was hard for Jewish people to get in into the high school. So he was doing substitute work, and he was teaching at night in night school. So he received I remember now. There was a note, there was an ad in the paper from IBM asking for people to work their machine. The computer had just come out. And everybody said, don't answer because they don't take any Jews in IBM. But he went down anyhow. And somehow they took him. They told him later he was the third Jew ever to be hired by IBM. And they sent him away for 4 months to Endicott, where they had their main factory. And when he came back, he was transferred to Baltimore. So we moved to Baltimore, and we lived there for 3 years.
When was this?
From 1940, let's see, David was born in 42. From about 1943 till 46, mm-hmm. I remember I was packing my bags to come to Pittsburgh the day that President Roosevelt died. I was listening to the radio, and they just broke in and announced it. And his father, my father-in-law, was very sick. And my husband used to come in every 2 weeks by train to visit him. And those were the days that the soldiers traveled, you know, so the civilians were letting last. He used to stand all night, Saturday night, and all night Sunday night coming home. He was very devoted to his parents.
And when you came back to Pittsburgh, you lived?
Well, we stayed with my parents until we, and nobody wanted to rent any apartment to us. We had two little children. So we bought a house on Douglas Street, and that's where we lived until we moved here.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about, let's go back and discuss your occupations.
Oh, yes. Well, as I told you, I was a public school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became a...
Now, what, from when?
Well, I started, let's see, I graduated from Henry Clay Frick in 1930, and I substituted for a year, for a half a year, and then I was a permanent, so I must have started about 1932, really, as a permanent teacher. Well, first I taught in the Rose School, which was on the hill. It's gone long ago, where it's Terrace Village is there now. And then I taught it, oh, and I asked for a transfer because the principal, Miss McKenzie, I'll never forget her, she resented my taking off for the holidays. And she, so she made it miserable for me. In those days, Rose School was built, it had a center hall that went all the way to the top, and the rooms were all around, you know. And every door opened out into the hall, as did the cloakroom door. I had a suspicion that she was coming in through the cloakroom and just standing there listening to me. I had the library, because that was my minor in college, library science.
Is that what you, that were you the librarian?
I was a librarian, but in those days, a librarian taught classes.
What did you teach?
Well, I taught literature to the fifth and sixth grades, and library science itself for reference to the others, and storytelling to the lowest grades. And I had a feeling that she was there, and somehow or other, I couldn't get it. Well, one day I was standing in front of the class, the cloakroom door was in the back, and it seemed to me that I saw a movement there, and I was very upset. By that time, I was just fed up. So I said to one of the children, a very loud voice, louder than I would ordinarily use, I wanted her to hear it, I said, would you go back and see who's in the cloakroom? Whoever is in there is not in there for something good, because if they were for something good, they would ask for permission to go into the cloakroom. So somebody may be going through the pockets of the coats. Well, she came out of there, her face was all red, and she said, oh, I'm sorry, Miss Hirsch. She said, I'm sorry. She said, your cloakroom door was open, and so I came in, I closed the door. Well, that was it. So I asked for a transfer, and then they transferred me to Manchester School, which was where I was until I became pregnant with my older boy.
And you stayed at Manchester School?
Oh, I was in Manchester School, let's see, that was in 32. I stayed in Manchester until 1942, that I know, because I became pregnant with David then.
So almost 10 years.
Yes.
And what did you teach there?
There, I started out as a, what would you call it, a reading teacher, but for with problem children.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first and second grade.
Like remedial reading.
Remedial reading teacher. But then I ended up as the social studies teacher in the fifth and sixth grades.
I was promoted to everything, didn't you?
Yes, and I was promoted to the third floor, which were the higher grades were. And then when I became, I was allowed. In those days, they said you could already get married, and that's when we were married. But if you were pregnant, you had to stop by the time you were 3 months. So I became pregnant with our David in the summer, and I had intended to teach until the end of November. Dr. Baroni was my. My obstetrician, and I went into him one day, it was in October, and he said to me, Pauline, just looked at me, and he said, there's something wrong with you. I said, what's the matter? He said, your eyes. He said, if I think there's something wrong with your kidneys. You have toxemia of pregnancy. I said, oh, come on, doctor. He said, yes. He said, lay down, and he examined me, and he took a blood sample and your analysis, and sure enough, he says, from now on, you have to lie on your back for the rest of your pregnancy. I said, I can't do that. He said, you'll have to. As a matter of fact, I'm going to come to your house, to your apartment. So I had to give up my job in October, and I was in bed. And a month before David was born, he was born April 24th, they sent me into the hospital for plasma. For 16 days, I had this intravenous going into my arms. And after that, he sent me home. He said, you'll probably... in about 2 weeks you'll give birth to your child. I came home, I remember, on Tuesday, and Tuesday night I went to, that time it was called the White Star Markets, where Howard Johnson's is on the boulevard across from Isley's. And I went with my husband shopping, and I came back, and Wednesday was okay. Thursday morning, he went off to work, and I didn't feel good, and I called my neighbor next door, and she says, come on, let's go to the doctor. And we went, and he sent me straight to the hospital. He says, you're going into labor. And I labored for 36 hours, and David was born Friday evening. So then, that was it.
Oh, it was Shabbos.
Yeah, his bris was on Shabbos. Everybody had to walk to the bris, I remember, because my parents lived on the hill, and so did my in-laws.
You were allowed to have a bris on a Shabbos?
Yeah, you can have even on Yom Kippur, you know. It must be on the eighth day unless the child is not well. Otherwise, it must be, and you know that in the bris, what they do is they use the wine, and they touch the baby's lips with the wine, and generally the wine is drunk, taken by the mohel, you know, but on Yom Kippur, you can't do it. So they don't. They just touch the baby's lips. But it must be. That's the rule. On the eighth day, you have to have it. So then, you know, then
this
I went.
The first grandchild for your father?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, the only, oh, yeah, Cheryl, my youngest brother, had a daughter. And then, we went to Baltimore, and I became pregnant. And he told me, Dr. Brody, don't ever have any more children. And he didn't tell me. See, isn't that peculiar? They never told me that I had a rheumatic heart. I didn't know that. But all he said was, don't have any more children. Well, I said, oh, one child, that's terrible. I wanted a girl. So I became pregnant. And in January, I remember I came in to see Dr. Baroni. I called him up from Baltimore. And I asked the nurse, and I said to him, I want to see you, doctor. He said, what do you want to see me about? I said, I just want to talk to you about something. I didn't tell him I was pregnant. I knew he started to yell. So, all right, so I came in, and when he saw that I was pregnant, he just hit the roof. And he said, well, all right. He said, I'm telling you, you'll have to spend the rest of your time in bed. You'll be moved back from Baltimore. Or you'll be with your parents, you'll have to stay in bed. So I said, he said, I'm sorry, you'll just have to do it. And that's what happened. I had to move back. My husband was in Baltimore by himself. We gave up our apartment. He took a room with a bath in East Baltimore, you know, on the street, Main Street there. It wasn't too far from the IBM building. And I stayed in again a bit. And then after Jerome was born, Dr. Brony told me, don't ever come to me again. Don't ever. And then I remember I didn't feel good. And we called Dr. Stutz. At that time, he was our family doctor. And Dr. Stutz came in. And he told me, Pauline, he said, I'm telling you right now, you have a rheumatic heart. Better be a well mother for two than a sick mother of three. And that was it. Mm.
Did you then worked after that?
Yes, when Jerome was 3 years old, about three, I went to teach in the Hebrew Institute.
Mm-hmm. How did you enjoy the couple years that you did spend at hand with the children when they were young?
I enjoyed it and I didn't. I was used to working and I just loved working. I like to be out. I'm what they call, I guess, an egalitarian. I just like to be out. And although I enjoyed my kids, you know, my family, but housekeeping is not my forte. I hate it. I can't stand it, as a matter of fact. And I could live in dirt. I used to tell everybody, when I walk into my home, I always look at the ceiling because that way I don't see the dust. So I was glad to go back to work.
You worked then all through their...
Yes, I worked.
Continually.
I started then, and I started to work. I worked after that.
And at the Hebrew Institute?
No, I worked at the Hebrew Institute till I taught Hebrew on television 1 year for WQED, and that.
What year was that?
Let me see now. What year was that? Either it was, must have been about 1959 or 1960. I can't remember the year really. Mm-hmm. And that year afterwards, I went into, that time Hillel Academy had moved from Ellsworth Avenue, mm-hmm. and they were in the process of building on Beacon Street, so they were having their classes at the Shara Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just came in around Christmas time to see what was going on, and here the kindergarten teacher was pregnant, he was going to have a baby, so Rabbi Teitelbaum asked me, please substitute till Christmas. So I was teaching in the morning in Hillel at 1 o'clock at the Institute until 6, And then I was running Monday evenings to WQED. And my husband was so angry with me, but I, you know, I did it anyhow. And afterwards, I decided that I would rather teach in the day school. I was able to, I mean, the children who came to the day school were different. They enjoyed the Hebrew. And so I gave up the Hebrew Institute, and I went to teach at Hillel. And I was there, I had my first heart attack in, let's see, I was in Israel in 1965, the first time. I must have had my first heart attack about 67, I'm sorry. It was after my son was married. And I came back to Hillel again. And then about a year and a half later, I was told I had to have open heart surgery. So I gave it up for a while, and I was away from school for about a year. Yeah, let's see, I was operated on in July for a year. And then I came back to Hillel for a half a day, and I went to Israel. My husband took a sabbatical for a year. We went to Israel, and I came back from Israel and went back to Hillel, and I taught 1 month, and I had my second heart attack. And that was it. Doctor, I couldn't teach anymore. So for the last 2 years, I've been, since it was my minor, I've been a Hebrew and Judaica librarian at the Hebrew Institute. That's my work now.